Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to another edition of Life Behind Bars. I'm Noah Rothbaum, the Daily Beast half-full editor. Joining me, as always, is my colleague and co-host, David Wondrich.
Howdy, y'all.
Today, we're talking about one of the simplest drinks that you can find in a bar or restaurant, really any place that serves alcohol, beer in a shot. You know, it's a simple but delicious combination of a beer and a spirit, often now whiskey, but it can be all types of things, from mezcal to tequila to, you know, gin even. One of my favorite combinations, and one that really goes back in time quite a bit.
After you've had a cocktail, maybe two cocktails, and you're out for the evening, a little glass of spirits and a beer to go with it is a pretty nice thing.
Absolutely. Kind of connected. I mean, obviously, the first step in making whiskey is making unhopped beer, which I think a lot of beer drinkers either like to forget about or don't know about. And same thing with whiskey drinkers. So clearly there's some connection there.
The funny thing is, if you look at the history of it, the whiskey making places, they always drank those together. Like Scotland and Ireland, going back, you find it on record as early as like 1605.
Wow.
You know, and that's pretty early.
Yeah,
whiskey
absolutely.
Was just beginning to take shape then. It was still a flavored spirit.
Yeah.
It wasn't the beautiful grain elixir that can sustain all life that we know now. Even then, they like to have some ale on the side. Other countries have always drunk it that way. Germany.
Sure.
The schnapps always goes with some beer on the side, or not always, but that's super common. Scotland, Ireland. It's weird, just to get into a little history riff, that America was really late to it.
I think of it as something so quintessentially American.
Yeah, likewise, a shot and a beer. I mean, hell yeah, let me put on my my trucker hat and go sit out on the porch shooting cans with my .22 and a shot and a beer right there. I mean, it's like completely American.
Dive bar staple. I mean, what would a dive bar be without a shot and a beer?
I don't know. I wouldn't want to go to it, though. You need the shot to sanitize the beer.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It's just healthy. American drinkways came from England.
Right.
And England wasn't really a whiskey drinking culture in the 18th century when so many English people came over here.
Beer, yes. But
beer, not... yeah. Yeah, they drank a lot of ale.
Right.
If they drank straight spirits, it was gin.
Huh.
And that was for poor people, and that was watered down so heavily anyway that it didn't really need so much of a chaser.
Right.
You get to America, our spirits industry started really building. Everybody drank it with ice water.
Huh.
And that was the American thing. And the Europeans would come here and go, what's all this ice water?
Right.
And that was for them was a huge luxury.
Right.
But for us, we had a big ice industry. Things get really cold in the north. They cut big blocks of ice and insulate them and save them. You would always get a glass of ice water back with your as the chaser. And that was the American chaser.
Like what time period?
We're talking the first half of the 19th century when American drinkways really started to get firm when we had like the cocktail bars invented.
Because even at that time, a lot of beer was like room temperature, right?
Yeah. We drank like ale, you know. And then in the 1840s, we started getting massive waves of German immigration. They bring lager beer with them.
Right.
And the Americans look at that stuff like kind of the more prejudiced nativist ones look at that stuff as poison.
Right.
It's like, what the hell are these people doing poisoning themselves with this lager beer? It's cold. It's just wrong. You know?
Right.
After a couple generations, everybody realizes that lager beer is actually A-okay.
Right.
And actually, America's really hot and we like lager.
Which also kind of becomes another signature of America where, we're now known for, the Budweisers of the world.
Exactly.
And Millers and that is America.
Yeah, lager, Pilsner style beers.
Right, of the rest of the world when they want to, when they drink quote-unquote American, they mean having a like a Bud.
Yeah, like something on the lighter side,
right.
Let's say,
very
cold.
Yeah.
Even in the 1890s, like you never drank them together. That was wrong.
Wow.
I found an article in one of the New York newspapers from around 1895. This guy steps up to the bar and says, I want a whiskey and a beer. And everybody looks at him like, what the hell is this? Who is this maniac?
Right.
And the bartender is like, I don't know if you want that, son. But, you know, and he puts them there. And then the guy's friend comes and joins him and takes the beer. And everybody relaxes.
Like, oh, thank God.
Thank God. To drink like that was crazy, right?
Yeah.
And it became known as the Boilermaker and his helper, because the Boilermaker pounded huge metal plates into shape and, and welded them and soldered them. And it was just like the hardest manual labor.
Right.
And his helper was the dumb guy who did all the hard work.
Right.
And so you'd have the Boilermaker, the shot, and his helper, the beer. It came out of like Pittsburgh and places like that. And it was also known as a Bohemian cocktail from the Czechs, who, like the Germans, had no problem drinking a little bit of beer with their spirits.
Sometimes we see the Boilermaker, the whiskey is dropped into the beer. That comes later, right?
Yeah, that got called originally. It was called like a depth bomb, I think.
And, depth charge,
yeah, depth charge, a depth bomb. You were, you know, that was kind of the cheesy way of doing it. I still think it. I don't do it.
Right.
But it took a while for us to come around to this.
Wrap
meanwhile,
our heads around
that. You've been all over the world.
Yeah.
I've been all over the world. Any hot country, you see people drinking this.
Sure.
Any cold country, you see people drinking it.
It is something that we think of as so American, but you're right. I mean, we see people South America.
I mean, yeah, I was in Brazil. I'm in, you know, drinking in cachaça bars, and you get these lovely glass of cachaça with a little garotinho, as they call it, a little like, you know, kind of pony of of ice cold Brahma beer or one of the other Brazilian beers. Like, and the beer is really cold, and the cachaça is really delightful.
In Amsterdam, you get one of the most bespoke shot and beer cultures, right?
I mean,
There's a whole ritual surrounding, you know, the Geneva service.
Yeah, the Kopstoutje. I think that's how you say it. I like Amsterdam bars. They have some of the most beautiful old bars in the world. You know, the Dutch always tell you that they're very cheap. Geneva, the gin of the country, but it's more like whiskey than gin.
Right.
It's lightly flavored whiskey, really. They pour it chilled in this little tulip-shaped glass so it bulges on top because they want to make sure they can get every drop into that glass that goes in there and then more.
Right.
And so you get the surface tension bulging the top up. The counters are kind of low that this gets served to you on with a little drink of like ice-cold Heineken. So you've got your little glass of beer and your bulgy top Geneva, and you put your hands behind your back and bend from the waist, take the first sip without using your hands.
Right.
You bend it because if you try to move it, the surface tension will break and it'll spill all over the place.
I mean, this sounds like some kind of game from like a fraternity house, but
this
is literally taking place.
I've seen people like line up, like Dutch people from their 20s through their
70s. And in some of the most beautiful historic bars that have been open for, you know, hundreds of
years. It's not a frat drink. It's just what you do. You know, it's very Dutch.
You know, you take a few sips.
Yeah.
And then
you sip the rest. If you go to bars here in America and you get a shot and a beer, the beer is usually a pint, right?
Right. Or a can, maybe.
A can or a bottle or a pint. But it's always like – it's like 12 to 20 ounces.
Yeah.
And elsewhere, it's a glass of beer. And I think
that's a little bit more reasonable.
It's a little more reasonable because I find the standard pour of spirits, I'm done with that and I've only drunk half my beer.
Right.
And you can either like get another, you know, shot to go with your pint and
exactly,
or drink the rest of the beer naked. And who wants to do that? You need that spirits to go with it.
I was just in Tulsa judging a big cocktail competition after judging 16 different bars.
Yeah.
What do I want? I want beer and a shot. We had a shot of like Jack Daniels and I wanted Miller High Life. I can't remember what they had. But you're right. It's like you finish.
It's too much beer.
It's too much beer for the the ratio is off.
Yeah. One of my favorite bars is in Milwaukee is Palmer's. They give you a shot of booze in a 6 ounce water glass.
Right.
And it's about, you know, half full at least. So there's plenty of booze in there.
Sure.
They give you the same glass again of full of water on the side. Or if you want beer for no extra charge. And it can be Grain Belt, their version, you know, of
Midwest favorite. Yeah.
Yep. I kind of like Grain Belt.
I do too.
And can be one of the local microbrews, you know, and it's just kind of beautiful. And that one they'll fill up. And it's like, isn't that how spirits should come?
Absolutely. Whenever I go to Minneapolis, I always insist upon drinking Grain Belt. I mean, there are obviously now literally dozens of craft breweries.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm always like, I can't get Greenbelt in New York. I want to drink Greenbelt here.
Yeah. Especially, you know, the lighter beers are good if you're drinking spirits too. You don't need the most complex beers.
And especially as the beers go up in alcohol.
Yeah, exactly. The whole point of having the beer is to keep you from drinking too much spirits.
Right. You know? And of course, leave it to American ingenuity for us to increase the amount of spirit, right? So like, you know, in other countries, you're probably getting maybe 100 centiliters, maybe like an ounce. But standard shot here is an ounce and a half. And then if you go to certain bars, long shooters, you know, or a generous pour, the bartender thinks that he's being generous, you know, suddenly it's at least 2 ounces.
Yeah, and suddenly you've had two of those and you're like, woo.
Right.
And you're drinking like a 9% double IPA with it.
You need no more. You need no more. That's
good night, Irene.
That's about enough. I don't know if you will agree with me, but even the kind of the highball is sort of related to a beer and a shot in some ways.
Yeah, you know, I guess it was. You know, it's sort of combining it's combining the stuff.
Especially like in Japan where they put in, I think it's like 3 or 4 parts sparkling water to 1 part whiskey. You get that kind of, I mean, it's obviously in the same glass, but it's that same sort of idea where you're sort of lowering the proof ultimately, you know, in your stomach anyway.
Yeah. You know,
by combining the two.
I mean, you see that kind of starting back in England in the 1820s, 30s, when soda water was touted as being the ultimate hangover cure.
Mm.
It was like that's what it was great for. And you could mix it with white wine, as Lord Byron suggested. Hock, German white wine, and soda water was his
hangover cure. I love that he was a white wine spritzer kind of guy.
Yeah, he was a white wine spritzer kind of guy, with many other things. He also drank a lot of gin punch. But he said for hangover cure, that was like what you want.
In his cravat and, you know, velvet smoking jacket, drinking a white wine spritzer.
Yeah, and, you know, eyeing the ladies dangerously.
To be honest, it gives me much more respect for the white wine spritzer.
Yeah, it was pretty good as a hangover cure. Yeah. But then people started saying, well, if that's good, maybe brandy and soda water is better. And
great drink.
Yeah, and brandy and soda is a lovely drink that you don't really see so much anymore.
Yeah.
That used to be a good one on airplanes until they all stopped carrying cognac.
Yeah.
But that was my go-to airplane drink forever was brandy and soda.
Well, I do like enjoy the Japanese style. Like, you know,
you can drown it quite a bit.
I kind of like it the other way, you know, more of the like, you know, like kind of the old timey movies where, you know, somebody goes to the sideboard, they have one of those old, you know, their own kind of carbonation, you know.
Oh, yeah, the soda siphon.
The soda siphon, they squirt, you know, great sound. You squirt a little bit of club soda into a small glass with whiskey or brandy, and, you know, that's perfect.
It's just to kind of open it up, lighten it up a little bit, keep you from slugging down pure brandy. Like so many drinks start out from the world of hangover cures.
Right.
And you're going to need highballs, brandy and sodas and stuff if you're drinking Boilermakers the night before and go a little overboard on it. You got to be careful with that, with the drinks.
Well, that's certainly hair of the dog. I mean, you're really getting into it if you're feeling good enough or bad enough to have brandy and soda the next day.
Ooh. I remember in the late 80s really starting to see my friends and I really get into the pint and a shot. You didn't have pints so much until the microbrew revolution in America. American beer came in mugs or small glasses.
That's true. Yeah.
The pint, they had to take a mixing glass from the cocktail bar to serve their pints in. That was the only glass that held a pint, was this mixing glass. So it took a while for pints to catch on in New York. You know, you go to McSorley's, you get two short beers.
Yeah,
and
in a mug.
Yeah, in a mug, exactly. And there was like frosty mugs. Yes, those were popular.
And I think before that, they were telling me at McSorley's a couple of Rafe Bartholomew and his and his dad that originally they were ceramic mugs, same size basically, but they were there were a few still behind the bar. Obviously, they don't use them. But whether you go to McSorley's or you go to a thrift shop, I remember as a kid they were always filled with, you know, mugs from this beer mugs from the 60s, 70s, you know, my grandmother's, you know, cabinet. You always had, you know, whether it was Löwenbräu or, you know, Miller or different, you know, old Pabst, old timey brands, you had these, you know, beer mugs that you'd see all over.
And those would hold like 8 to 12 ounces.
They weren't huge.
They weren't huge.
Because, I mean, even as a kid, I could, you know, drink club soda from them or water or whatever. Yeah. And it wasn't, we're not talking about like the Oktoberfest, you know, Munich style.
No, no, they're not like a Moss, you know, they don't hold a liter.
You know, it kind of speaks to the way that things have evolved. When you ordered a beer in a shot, it was probably smaller.
You know, microbrewing in America came out of emulation of English beers and ales. And so they wanted pints, you know, because that's what you drink in England. And in England, the shots of spirit are really small. Ours are much bigger.
And measured.
Yeah.
I mean,
the measures and everything's measured.
There is no generous pour there.
No, I mean, everything is tightly controlled.
Yeah. And expensive.
So, you know, for us, suddenly we get these pint glasses and they go along with the huge kind of oversized shots of booze. I mean, I remember in the 80s in New York, we called that Irish handcuffs. And you've got your pint of Guinness in one hand and your large shot of Bushmills in the other. Right. And you're not doing anything, you know, because those take a while to get through.
I mean, I think even something like Jack Daniels, like its rise to prominence in the 80s. I mean, obviously, people like Axl Rose and, you know, and Guns N' Roses.
Keith Richard before that.
Keith Richard, sure. A lot of that was shots, you know, shots and a beer. And it's, you know, whether you all do a round of shots and then you have a beer or, you know, you're ordering it immediately, got to have helped, I think, spread that whole drink around the country, and just what popularized it with a whole new generation.
This is a way of drinking I still enjoy. And come back to, but I tend to sip them as much as possible. And if I can get a shorter beer, I'm very happy. Some bars, it's amazing. They have to scrounge through their glassware to find something small enough. You know, I ask them, I want a glass of beer, not a pint. Right. I'm willing to pay the full price of a pint.
I don't care.
I don't care. You know, I just don't want that much beer.
It's funny because in the UK, you can order like a half pint.
Yeah,
or
half
a pint. And
yeah.
It's totally, it doesn't besmirch your manhood or womanhood, you know, to order a beer that small.
No.
Here, of course, in America, we see that as, you know, weakness.
Yeah.
That allows you to switch beers, to try different things, to, you know, have a beer and still be fairly clear-headed.
That trying different things is kind of interesting, too. Right. People like, you know, our good friend Eric Castro at Boilermaker Bar here in New York. And there are plenty of others who started doing pairings of shots and beers because they have these wild beer lists.
Yeah.
It's like, what will go with what? I mean, there's no fixed rules here.
Right.
But it's kind of fun to play around
absolutely.
Bit. You know, why stop with whiskey and beer?
Right.
You've got these grapefruity flavored modern IPAs that are so bright, and you can have some mezcal with that.
I was just about to say, tequila mezcal is perfect for that.
They're perfect for that. And then some of the other beers are just so round and mellow. You might want like a Calvados or a cognac with that. And
it is interesting. I mean, you get all of the fruit beers. You have people, you know, serving rye whiskey, bourbon, scotch. I think kind of as a general, like, you know, it's, you know, people like to pair similar things together, you know, like sweet with sweet or spicy with spicy, but sometimes fun also to go against that rule.
Yeah,
which means that there really is no rule.
There is no rule. I think it's just fun to play around, you know.
Yeah.
If you don't like that pairing, don't order that pairing. You're not doing it wrong.
Right, and it's kind of nice, too, because you're not, you know, in a lot of these bars, you're not spending that much for the pairing. You know, if you don't like the pairing, just drink one and then the next one, you know.
Yeah.
It's not really.
Yeah, you're not super invested in it.
Yeah. It's also the type of thing where you could basically order it at any bar. Some of the cocktail bars, the problem is a lot of them don't carry beer.
Right.
You know, or if they do, they carry maybe one beer.
They'll have one beer on tap or two beers on tap. But, you know, two beers on tap, that's good enough.
Perfect,
I'll start with that.
Yeah.
I'm okay. Some of my favorite bars in the world have only one beer on tap.
Right.
You know,
it's one of the universal drinks that I think I would say most bars in America can do. You know, maybe you might get an odd glance at some of them for ordering it, but it's something that you could always get.
I mean, worst comes to worst, you're drinking one of the main bourbon companies. They'll usually have one that's a little up the scale from the regular.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're lucky, you're drinking Jim Beam Black.
Right.
And in terms of beer, these days you'll probably be able to at least get a Sam Adams.
Right.
And, you know, Jim Beam Black and a glass of Sam Adams, I'll take that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's absolutely fine.
Make it two of those.
Yeah. Keep them coming.
Well, I think that concludes another episode of Life Behind Bars. Dave and I are going to go and have a beer and a shot. I hope you will, too. And we'll be back with another episode. Cheers.
Cheers.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.